Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. Anger is a common emotion which we human beings feel, pretty much all of us. In fact, some people would say that lacking any sort of emotional response of anger, we might not even be fully human. For Aristotle, anger plays a very important role, not only in ethics, but also in other venues too. The political arena, within the workings of the soul, he treats it as a separate cause of human actions in some other works. Here, we're not going to concentrate on all that. We're mainly interested in the fairly short Nicomachean ethics discussion of anger, supplemented by a few things from Eudaimonian ethics. There, Aristotle is primarily interested in the moral status of anger in terms of virtue and vices on different sides. So that's what we're going to explore. I think in order to make sense out of this, it's very helpful to bring in a few things very quickly from some of his other works so that we can adequately understand what we're talking about. So what are we actually concerned with here? The feeling of anger and the responses that a person makes. Now, for Aristotle, anger is a semi-rational emotional response. It's more rational, he thinks, than the workings of some of the other passions, the pathe, the emotions, the desires that we experience. And he ends up defining anger most articulately in the rhetoric. He does have other definitions at other places. He defines it as a desire for apparent or public, or however you want to define it, could even be imaginary, retribution, timoria, literally setting things right, or you might think of it as re-honoring oneself, provoked by the appearance of unjustified slighting to another person. Then he goes on and defines what slighting can mean. It literally means putting somebody down, making them lower than they really ought to be, treating them in a way that does not value them. And what's really important here is the apparent. This turns up twice. It has to do with the response, the actual action that a person takes. What will count as setting things right, what will count as acting out of anger and engaging in retribution, but also the cause. One doesn't have to get angry at things that are actually there. As a matter of fact, these vices that are concerned with this are going to be, in large part, a matter of getting angry for things that are only imagined but not actually real, apparent but not actually the case. So Aristotle thinks that anger is a emotion that we all tend to feel and be gripped by. There are some people who don't feel it enough, he thinks. Not only don't act on it enough, but don't feel it enough, and we'll come to that in a moment. But for the most part, our problems tend to be on this side of the spectrum, from vice of deficiency through virtue, the mean, through vices, notice plural, of excess. We tend to be more over on that side. So let's think, what would it be to feel virtuous anger? Well, it's not a question of feeling virtuous anger. It's a question of feeling and acting on anger virtuously. There's a big difference there. It's not anger itself, the emotion itself, the response that we feel, the bodily response, the psychological response, the actions that we take, its exhibition in our gestures and our visage and all those sorts of things. It's not the anger itself that is right or wrong, good or bad, noble or base. Instead, it's how it is, the manner, the time, who it's directed at, what caused it. Is it the right thing? There's a lot of different rights. And Aristotle actually uses this as an example in a quote that gets used by Daniel Goleman in his Emotional Intelligence book to start the whole book. It's difficult to say precisely how angry a person should get at what time, et cetera, going through all these rights. That means that it's difficult to pin down rules for this, but that doesn't mean that there isn't some sort of measure and that there isn't some sort of habit that people who are well situated with anger actually fit into. So let's first start talking a little bit about terminology. The word that we use for this virtue is a Greek word, praotes, and it comes from praos, which means something like mild or calm or gentle, something along those lines. And praotes is the substantive of that. A praos would be a person who's actually in that case. Now, you can translate that as good-tempered. You can translate that as gentle. You can translate that as mild. Another translation that you might not realize because it's used in other works in translating them could be meek. When, for example, in the New Testament, there's these Beatitudes about blessed are the meek, it's the same Greek word. Blessed are the praos. And when Moses, who you don't normally think of as being, you know, particularly quiet guy, right? When he's talked about as being meek, it's the same word as well. Now, that doesn't mean that he doesn't lose his temper. Think about, you know, he breaks the tablets, right? To be mild does not mean that a person never gets angry. It means that a person gets angry in certain ways at the right time for the right amount. There's all sorts of sort of limits on it. Limits that are integral not just to some sort of rule coming in from above, but to what makes a person's life good, what will actually get them towards a network of good relationships. So this word, I'm going to just use mildness here. We could use all these other synonyms if we wanted to. What is the mild person like? What is their character like? What habits have they built up? So Aristotle tells us a few different things. One is that this person does not act so much from the feeling, but as reason tells them to do. Now, that's a very, very high standard. So I actually look at this as, here's mildness one, and then the other stuff is mildness two. But does not act from the feeling. So this person does feel the feeling, but they don't let the feeling run the show. When the feeling is telling them, hey, go do that, Aristotle talks about anger as being like a hasty servant that only listens to half the instructions and thinks, I'm being insulted, and then it goes off immediately to take revenge. When you're reasoning on the basis of your emotions, you're not really reasoning. Reason has become a slave to the passions, to use a human phrase, right? Instead, what we ought to be doing is looking at things, even when we're irritated, Aristotle thinks, in a more detached, dispassionate manner, and saying, yeah, okay, this is actually a case where I ought to get angry, and I ought to go this far with my anger in expressing it, in acting on it, in complaining, in punching somebody in the nose, you know, all these sorts of things that result from anger and yelling. Another thing that Aristotle tells us, there's a whole bunch of rights. And this is really central to having a good disposition with respect to anger. Many people go wrong by getting angry at the wrong people. You should get angry at the right people. If you're angry because you've been harmed, get angry at the person who actually harmed you or the person who caused the situation that resulted in another person harming you. Don't get angry at just at any, you know, bystander or the person who points something out to you, or let alone the person who's actually trying to help you. There's a certain discrimination that's required here in order to have a virtuous disposition with respect to anger. At the right time, there are some times where it's really not appropriate to be angry or to act on anger or to display anger. And it's a sign of an immature, selfish person to indulge themselves in anger all of the time, or any time that they see fit. For example, I could get angry at a student within the classroom, and it would be self-indulgent of me to act on that, even if the student is really being a complete jerk. I should actually try to, you know, keep in my mind, what are we trying to accomplish in this classroom? What are we trying to get done here? And then talk to the person afterwards. And it's fine to tell them, hey, you know, you're a jerk, not just, oh, you know, when you act this way, you make me angry, the kind of, you know, assertiveness training that people like. It's okay sometimes to call a jerk a jerk. I think that sometimes when you're out on the road and you honk your horn at somebody, a lot of people don't like to honk their horns, you're actually doing a public service because you're telling that person, hey, get with it, or pay attention, or you're acting like a jerk. And if enough people do that in the right way to the people, maybe they'll change their behavior or at least think about it. But right time is a key thing. Right occasion. What's making you angry? Is this actually a situation in which you ought to get angry? Are you in fact, or just apparently, being treated as if you are of lesser value? a lot of times, you know, people get angry about things, and then other people say, hey, this is just business. I treat everyone this way. And then when you realize that, you might say, oh, yeah, I probably shouldn't get angry about this. Right manner. How do you get angry? This is a key thing. A lot of these vices over here are going to have to do with the how, the manner in which one gets, stays, and exhibits angriness. Right length of time. That's a key thing as well. How long should you be angry? How long should you stay angry at somebody? Is it dependent on them acknowledging their fault and doing something to fix it? Or are there cases where you ought to say, well, this is more damaging to me to remain angry. I'm not going to get the redress that I want from this person. So I really ought to, for my own sake and for the sake of the other people who got to put up with me being angry, deal with this and put it to rest. So a key point that Aristotle is making here is that if a person has a virtuous disposition with respect to anger, they will in fact get angry in some situations. There are some cases that call for a certain amount of anger. And he's not saying that it's something that you can specify with, you know, neatly quantified things. You should be angry at this person for exactly 2 days and 4 hours, unless, of course, they exhibit this amount of, you know, being contrite. And in that case, it'll cut it down 50%. It's not like that. But there are measures for this, and a person ought to get angry, at least as far as Aristotle sees it, a person ought to get angry in some cases. Now, the third thing that he tells us, which is particularly interesting, is that the person who is mild, who is a gentle person, who is well-tempered, is more inclined to forgive or to let go. The Greek word is syngnome, which is not exactly the same as what you'd see, for instance, in the Gospels, where it's a different verb. That's the basis of that. Aphiemi, to let go, literally. But there is some overlap between the two of these. So gnome has a more cognitive aspect of thinking, understanding, being perhaps you might even say empathetic. But it does have the ultimate result of saying, yeah, okay, this is fine. I'm willing to let it slide. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're A-okay with the person, but you're not going to allow what they're doing to necessarily cause you to be angry and then to lose your temper and act in an angry way. So they're more likely to forgive than to seek retribution in situations where a person would get angry or in cases where they do get angry. That's part of what allows them to be angry for the right length of time or in the lack of seeing things get set right. Let's talk about the other extreme. That Aristotle in the Nicomachean Ethics actually says, well, this is extremely rare. As a matter of fact, we don't even have a name for it. That's a pretty extraordinary thing to say, and I think that tells you quite a bit about ancient Greek society, or at least ancient Greek male society, that Aristotle thinks it was so rare. Jacques Lacan has called Aristotle's ethics an ethics of masters, and it ignores the fact that a lot of people did have to sort of suck it up. But, you know, they found ways to also be angry and retaliate as well. But there are some cases, and he talks about this more in the Eudaimonian Ethics, where a person does not get angry when a person ought to get angry. Anger is, like we said before, about when a person is being treated as if they have lesser value or no value. Literally being looked down upon. You know, they're being made less of. And one gets angry not only on one's own account, but on account of one's wider network of relationships. So one also gets angry if one's family or one's friends or one's comrades are being insulted or attacked or injured or you know, what have you. So there are cases, Aristotle would say, where a person ought not only to defend themselves, and getting angry is part of the process of defending yourself. They also ought to get angry on account of their mother, their father, their children, their brother, their sister, their friend, being treated in a bad way. So this is a defect of character, not to get angry and not to act on anger when that anger would motivate you to stand up for, like I put here, to stand up for oneself or for others with you know, whom one is connected, whose happiness matters to one, right? Or unhappiness matters to one. So he calls this spiritedness, the spiritedlessness literally lacking thumos, lacking the thing that is the part of us that gets angry, that gets riled up. He also calls it slavish. And it's worth remembering, you know, slaves had a very different set of experiences running an entire gamut. Some slaves were treated quite well and actually exercised quite a lot of power in ancient Greece and Rome. Other slaves were treated horribly. You know, the ones who had to work in the mines, that's particularly bad for them. And slaves, one of the things that you can say about them is that they had to just suck it up. So that's a way of thinking about anger there. Let's talk now about all these different vices of excess that I've put over here on the side. I actually don't have all of them. Aristotle has one other sort of thing that he mentions, agriloi, but I didn't have room for it, and it's not particularly important. It just comes up in the Eudaimon Ethics. This is a set of different modalities of vice with respect to anger. So, you know, if in fact the virtue has to do with all these rights, you know, right occasion, right people, right time, right amount, all those sorts of things. When you have a vice, it's going to be some of these in terms of wrongs. So perhaps getting angry too much, getting angry at the wrong person, getting angry at the wrong things, staying angry for too long. Aristotle says something really interesting. He says nobody can actually compile all the wrongs into themselves because they would be just totally deranged. You know, it would be vice would totally corrupt the person's soul. But there are different ways in which we humans characteristically go wrong. I don't think that Aristotle manages to cover everything, but he actually does put together quite a lot of ground for this. So what do we have? We have the irascible, the orgiloi in Greek, a common way of talking about persons who had a bad disposition with respect to anger. And it's coming from the Greek word for anger, orge. There's two Greek words, actually, thumos and orge, and they're often used as synonyms by Aristotle. These are people who feel the emotion of anger far too quickly. So they're hotheads. They have a short fuse, we say. And so they get angry more quickly than they ought to. It doesn't take much to provoke them. They often get angry with the wrong people. There's spillover, you might say. But Aristotle comes right out and says this. He's very explicit about this. There is something good about these people. They're too quick to anger, but they're also very quick once they've sort of expressed their anger, and they don't necessarily have to express it by hurting somebody or anything like that. But once they've actually had their anger, it goes away very quickly. So he says that's a good thing. They're hotheads, but they also, you know, are able to go back to a normal state fairly easily. These other cases, not so much. And these emphasize different aspects in which we go wrong and stay going wrong. So the akrocholoi, the rageful, these are people who get angry very quickly. They get angry for a long time. It doesn't go away as easily. Aristotle doesn't go into very good detail about this or think, you know, very deeply about this, but there's something about their souls and about what they do with their anger that tends to perpetuate that state of being angry. You know, if you think, for example, one of the things they teach you in anger management is when you're angry, you're making bad decisions and your reasoning is going to tend to be off and it's going to tend to replicate the anger. So one of the things you should do is do something unrelated to what you're angry about, unrelated to anything else. Go and think about something else for a while. And if you do that, you'll generally calm down. Unless you allow yourself, while you're out, say, taking a walk, to think about, I'm, you know, that was the wrong thing for them to do, and they're always screwing me around, or, you know, something, anything along those lines, anything which is bringing the anger back up, the cause of the anger, the, you know, I wish I could do something about this, the, I'm going to, you know, I'll show them next time that I have an opportunity. That's what the rageful do, I think. Aristotle doesn't say this, but I think there's resources in his works for talking about this in the De Anima and some of the other works. In any case, these people tend to spill over their anger into all sorts of other things fairly inappropriately. So they start out being angry about this, and now they're angry about this, and now they're angry about this, and they just get madder and madder and madder. That's a big problem. So they are lacking restraint on their anger, on both the emotion and the expression of it, in terms of a lot of these different categories. Then there's the bitter. This is a particularly interesting category. The word that he uses there, the pikroi, is actually the word that's used for sharp sounds and for bitter taste. And you know people who are bitter. And quite often, they're not only bitter about things that they're getting angry about now, they're also bitter about other things that they haven't let go from before. And that's exactly what Aristotle talks about. He says that they keep their anger in. They're not able to discharge their anger, or they don't discharge their anger, and they keep it in. And because they haven't been able to do that, because they haven't had that timoria, that setting things right, that retribution, that reckoning, they remain angry. And they remain angry for a very long time, and it starts to burn within them. I would say that passive-aggressive people actually fit into the category of the bitter. Many people would say, yeah, passive-aggressive people, they're like the people over here who don't really express their anger. But they do express their anger. They express their anger in very palpably bitter ways, where you can tell that there's something going on there beneath the surface. There's more emotion there than is actually being acknowledged in the sarcasm, in the context of things. And the trouble with these people is until they actually are able to discharge that, they are going to be bitter like that. And once it becomes a habit, they can become bitter about all sorts of things. It becomes something that is difficult to root out of the soul. After a while, they may actually not even understand what they're truly bitter about. They may take something like, you know, psychotherapy to be able to figure that out. Finally, there's the harsh, the halepoi. And halepainen is a Greek word that is used, there's a number of different Greek words that are used for getting angry or being angry or expressing anger. Orgizein, coming from the Greek word orge, anger. Anaktein, but halepain means to be like difficult, to be literally a pain in the butt, right? To make things rougher than they need to be. And I think harsh is a fairly good translation of that. The harsh refuse to be reconciled without some sort of retribution. They're different than the bitter in that they're actually looking for some retribution. They're going to make sure that some retribution happens, but they will not forgive. They will not cease to be angry and cease to act in the way that an angry person does until they have some sort of reckoning, some retribution that is okay with them. And generally they're going to be off in their assessment of what actually counts as that. So they don't forgive when they ought to over small things. That's why they're kind of pains. Each of these emphasize different aspects of how we can go wrong with anger. It could be about the things that we're getting angry about. You know, we get too angry too quickly, indiscriminately, for the wrong reasons, with the wrong people. Or it could have to do with how well we're able to manage our anger once we actually have it. Do we actually exhibit it? Do we deal with it in a healthy way? Or do we kind of like keep it inside and let it fester? Do we ever let it go when we need to? Are there situations in which we are legitimately angry, but for our own sake and for the other person and for everybody else concerned, we ought to let it go? The virtuous person, you know, is the person who is inclined to forgive in those cases, to let it go. The harsh person doesn't do that. They insist on their rights. They insist on, I have been hurt, or my kid has been hurt. I want satisfaction. That would be this case of being harsh. So we've looked now at all the different things, all the different categories here with respect to anger. Aristotle has them organized, as he does with every other set of virtues and vices, into a virtue in the middle. Vices on the ends, excess and deficiency. I think this one is fairly straightforward. Very rich descriptions that he has running throughout his works, and plenty to think about, I think, and reflect upon.
Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.